World of Space Design and Build podcast, episode 6, featuring Darren Keeler, with your host Simon Joss.
There we go. A very good afternoon. It is afternoon for both of us. Welcome to the World of Space Design and Build with your host Simon Joss, and I am with a very, very long-standing client and friend of mine, Mr. Darren Keeler. How are you?
Hello, Simon. Really good to see and talk to you, mate. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Yeah. Good. You're looking well. Constant Movember we've got going on now, I see. We'll have to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, Christmas is coming and, you know, you've got to earn an extra bit of cash.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, just as we crack on, tell us a bit about yourself, how we know each other, and obviously your time within the Middle East and what you're doing now.
Okay, so military background, got into accommodation services in the army and then left and must have had 15 different employers until I ended up in Dubai in 2008. When the credit crunch, which was, I think, the last worldwide panic hit in 2009, got laid off and somebody I knew offered me a job with an organization called Sidra Medical and Research Center in Doha, in Qatar. Oh, wow. And it was, I think, well, I was successful. I joined, I think I was the 125th employee of the organization. Wow. Yeah. What, 125? All part of Qatar Foundation, which was a big help in the beginning because we were so small. We were out in an old school building that is now the Education City Golf Course, which looks fabulous.
It does.
Yeah.
Got a decent background as well, jealous. With a little stadium just, you know, stealing the line.
yeah, little stadium. Yeah, it's gorgeous. And then as the Sidra Medical Center Hospital grew out the ground, I think it was just steels coming out of the desert when I joined in 2009. Then we had various expansion of recruitment and staff, and we moved into a building in just on the edge of the business district, Al Nasser Tower, and we outgrew that really quickly. And you and I had sort of met socially in the world famous Doha Rugby Club,
which is sadly no longer there.
Yeah. My brother-in-law sent me the photographs, and that was my second home in Doha, much to my wife's disappointment. And then we were looking for additional space, and the Burj Doha had quite a few vacant floors at the time. Yeah. And I went along, did a bit of a survey, did all the background kind of stuff for it. And we took 6 floors there that needed fitting out with furniture, but we knew it was temporary, I believe, which worked very well. So a few little jobs, but then quite a nice big fit out of the 6 floors, which had its ups and downs and speed bumps, not between us, but between the landlord and the landlord's facilities management provider. Yes. It was tough. Instead of just working together and sorting it out. Sorry?
There was too many cooks involved.
Yeah. Luckily, it came in on budget and on time. Thanks to you and your guys, and you had a good team there actually, and we did because all the floors were circular. Remember, just a perfect circle with the support pillars inside.
Yeah.
Even though you were renting 200 square meters of a circular space, you were only probably getting, what wasn't it, something like 170, 160 meters of view.
The floor plate was about 1,000 square meters, and you were getting something like 780. Because the rest
was
taken up. It was unusable because the columns are at an angle.
Yeah. Your memory is far better than mine, young fella.
I did 16 floors in that tower, including your 6. So each floor was different. To an extent, each floor was different. the columns got narrower and narrower as the, as they went up the tower. So you always had to be on the game with that floor plate.
Yeah. So that was the main project that we worked on together.
Nice little rooms, acoustic rooms. We turned them into psych. It sounded like sort of psychiatric
little jobs along.
The psychiatric meeting rooms. You walked in and you felt as if you were in a padded cell. But it did the job.
We've pictures of the Sidra vision of received by the HR department and the senior medical staff, because they were then able to use that and have confidential interviews with the high-flying senior medical professionals from the USA that we were recruiting at the time. Needless to say, that kind of flipped when the build was delayed due to several problems that I won't go into. But and then it got flipped on its head, and now Sidra Medical, as it's known, is based on an NHS blueprint with quite a lot of former NHS staff and other Westerners. And I think at one count, we had people from like 73 different countries in Sidra, which, trying to, as the mouth on legs, delivering the health and safety induction training, that became a bit of an informative learning lesson delivered for all the different nationalities. But then also, you know me, with a bit of comedy thrown in to keep those who were more safety culture aware to keep them engaged and entertained. So I must have seen quite a few thousand people going through that process. So it was an enjoyable time, and I was there for just under 9 years. And whilst on holiday in Cornwall visiting my family who live in Newquay, my wife and I had had a nice cold glass of cider, and I said, right, okay, you know, I've done my 12 years in the Middle East, where do you want to go, darling? And as we're fortunate fortunate or unfortunate, we don't have any children, and we didn't have a dog at the time. She just literally put a finger on the table and said that I want to live here, Newquay by the sea.
Wow.
And we were just, and that was it. The ball started rolling, and I got a job with a charity organization that is a tin mine museum and a public park. Did that for a year and a half, came back to Doha, to mobilize an FM contract for ExxonMobil under Mace Macro, and then came back to the UK, and I'm now looking after Cornwall Airport, which it's the last box of all the different FM buildings I think that you can have, because obviously I've done military, government, customs and excise, schools in Liverpool, and then housing and that in Dubai and in Doha, medical. So I literally had the job interview, and it wasn't for any particular site, with a company called Cormac Facilities, but also makes it every day interesting. And the guy who's now my boss, funnily enough, he's ex-Royal Navy, so there's a bit of a military connection. And he said, look, we're not going to offer you the job in Truro or Penzance or Liskard. And I'm going, really? I mean, you know, I'm experienced and qualified. He said, no, calm down. What about looking after the airport, Cornwall Airport? I went, I'll take it. And he said, but I've not told you how much or what. I said, I'm sure you'll pay me the right salary, and it's 4 miles from my front door to where I work at Cornwall Airport. So I bought myself a bike. We'd already got the dog. So my life is now complete. Dog, good wife, cider, and motorcycle to go to work on.
There you go. And a bit of
sunshine. So that's my story, Simon, really.
A bit of sunshine, and as you say, the seaside, when it stops raining, as you mentioned before we came on air.
Listen,
I'm really thankful that you've come on, because it was an opportunistic thought that I had a few days ago when we were chatting online. And I thought, you know what? I've spoken to people about the front end in design. I've spoken to people about the real estate aspect. I've spoken to people about literally the space. Let's flip it. Let's go to a bit of, I want to talk about a bit about change management. I know you're experienced in that because of the amount of departmental changes that happened within SIDRA. And also what your thoughts are about potential change management implications because of COVID and hybrid working. But also you're keen to talk about how facilities need to be involved more at the front end and in the build in order to ease the management of the facilities later. And then let's finish off with how technology is going to play a big impact in whether it's BIM or whether it is asset registering on a facilities side. So let's start with the change management. That was quite a big part of your team's role within the health side of things at SIDRA. How do you think that's going to impact or be impacted going forward with COVID? Do you think that's going to become much more of a section in itself that companies have to consider?
Definitely. And the one thing about change management, it's not the focus really on how you do it and where you want to go to. I believe that it's all about the people. So the people who are involved in that change, and we're going through some massive changes now with my organization, Cormac, and the council, because everybody was made, if you like, pushed gently to go and work from home in the UK, and especially down here in Cornwall, which was the right thing to do. Some people have really taken to it and probably won't ever come back to work in an office unless it's for a meeting once we've had the easing of restrictions, and some people just do not like it. So you're quite right with the hybrid working. We are looking at drop-in centres, meeting centres. I would say it would probably mean that the estates look at their strategy and change and look at how we use the buildings. Hopefully that will involve repurposing some of them, maybe into accommodation, because there's a lot of people on the housing waiting lists down in this part of the country. Yeah. So that's, you know, because I'm kind of going through that now. When, at SIDRA, it was the fact that we have the multinationalities and everybody of a certain grade, a certain personality, and probably even from a certain ethnicity, is always worried that they're going to lose the job, because it's not just them and their families in Doha that would be affected. Yeah. It's the people back home in their home nations that they send the money to. Yeah. Which has always, but I've always, it motivates them greatly, but at any time of change, you're going to get uncertainty. And it was the same with my fellow countrymen, you know, oh, what's happening? You know, we've heard that the hospital's delayed. Are they going to shut everything down? You know, the rumor mill starts going and everybody starts thinking about packing up and being sent home on a plane and then maybe re-employed. So there was all sorts going on. And the best thing that SIDRA did was communicate with everybody and start the town hall meetings. Even to the stage where towards the end of the project and my time there, Lord Darcy, who was heading up the health service for Qatar and also for SIDRA, sat down in front of about 1,800 people in the auditorium in Qatar Foundation at the conference centre there, and just told everybody what he knew was going on, what he wanted to go on, and then spent 45 minutes question and answer session. And that allayed a lot of fears. It really did. And until somebody presses the button and makes the decision, our strategies, I think we had about half a dozen at the time. And we were looking again at Burj Doha. We were looking at Northgate Mall at the time. Right, any empty buildings? Yeah. Any empty buildings within a decent driving distance, commuting time and distance from SIDRA Hospital was looked at. even down to porter cabins, a porter cabin city at the back of Education City, you know, because that had been done before. That's done quite often in the Middle East.
It is.
So you're working on seven different scenarios. I think it's a bit easier in the UK because we have employment law and there's only so much we can do with the money that we've got in the organisation. But to me, change management, it's all about the people.
Yes.
If you haven't got the people on side, then it's not going to happen, or you're going to have multiple speed bumps along the way.
And at the end of the day, you've got to communicate and you've got to ask what people want. You know, whether it's a poll or a survey or it's a town hall meeting, as you said. I love that expression, by the way. You get them around a table, you get them in an auditorium, a meeting room, and go, okay, how does the business work? What type of business are we? Do you prefer to work from home? Is it going to benefit you with regards to children, childcare, schooling, school runs? Are you more productive from 3 o'clock till 9 o'clock PM? Are you more productive from 6 AM to 12? So that hybrid working, that flexibility, I think is now the norm. Not for everyone, but it's going to evolve. It's a bit like online learning and e-commerce. It takes its time, but it is going to sort of, that percentage is going to increase quite a bit. I think the Middle East will take a bit long. I think Qatar, she won't mind me saying that, because Dubai, having been there last week, the multinationals that are there that use that as their Middle East hub, they're already with it. They're already ahead of Saudi, Qatar, Kuwait, etc. Probably Bahrain and Oman definitely as well. Yeah. So I think Qatar will take a little bit longer. Again, from a Sidra perspective, when we were having our conversations, when we were walking around the floors in Al Nasser, and even to an extent, it was only when you went to Burj Doha for that expansion space, did open plan become a bit more relaxed and utilized. The Al Nasser was very cellular. A lot of people were moving from department to department because of cultural or department or various circumstances, and it was very regular. So there are certain sectors within the Middle East, within Qatar in particular, where we tend to focus, that may not be looking at change management in the same way as multinational organizations that are based in the UK, the US, and of course have their presence in the Middle East. Now, moving on to something more along education lines, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. There are two distinct differences between facilities management. I'm going to throw in defects and maintenance.
Yep.
And it's amazing to me how many people don't understand the difference. We'll throw a little joke in here. It's like people not understanding the difference between Great Britain and the United Kingdom, and then having to explain it to them. And some of them are British. But moving on from that, you then say, well, that's not a defect. It is maintenance. Or that's not maintenance. That comes under facilities. Do you find that was quite a difficult thing to look at and educate when you were in Qatar specifically? Or is it a bit of a global thing where you're having to educate people on those differences?
It's a global issue, because I have a building that's like a business center built near Cornwall Airport, and there are still defects being managed by the build contractor 2 years after completion. Though it did stand empty for, I don't know, 9-12 months prior to it's occupied by its first. And that's where the advantage of having your FM or your maintenance manager be there at the end of the project. Yes, it's going to cost somebody money to put that person in there to see the witnessing, testing and commissioning of the, you know, all the MEP, but to start getting through the O&M manuals and looking at the suppliers of where they've bought everything. You get a 12-month warranty period on all your mechanical, electrical equipment. So what happens when that ends? My preference is to engage with the same company to provide the maintenance for another year. if possible. Though you do have the times when those companies go into insolvency and go bankrupt towards the end of a project, and then the owners have run away with the money. I think you and I have seen that several times in our joint experience. So it happened. It certainly happened with us handing back the space to Burj Doha. Which was a bit of a sting in the tail.
A mutual friend of ours, we were having a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago, and he's still bitter about it, is John.
Well, he will be, because he has a passion for maintenance and for doing it right. And the amount of times I've seen him stand around a chiller unit in 50 degrees heat on the top of a building or somebody's accommodation on in a compound in Doha, and instruct six Indian AC technicians that frigging the wire from that chiller unit over there across and across to that chiller unit over there to make it work is not the right way to do things. So, and John had a very good reputation around Education City. I used to loan him out to go and do investigations when there were incidents that the Qatar Foundation Health and Safety team used to do, and I used to go as well. And some of them were not nice. We lost a worker with a false earth on a generator. One was a Chinese AC unit bought cheap that melted and caused fatal injuries to a little baby sleeping underneath it, and you know, horrible things like that. Never mind the fire disaster at Villaggio Mall. Was that 2015, 2013?
Oh, 2010.
See, how old am I getting?
Yeah.
So yes, and knowledge is power. Having taken over multiple new build buildings at the airport and come in quite late after they've been completed, to get to the bottom of it, all I've got is a stack of O&M manuals. Mm-hmm. And even if the soft copy on my laptop, it just takes hours of word searching to get to the bottom of something instead of a simple checklist. And I think certain construction companies, and I'm not saying it's the ones who built the airport, and I'm pointing that way because that's where it is from my house.
Right. Okay.
You know, did they do it on purpose? Did they make it really hard for laziness. Us to do that? Sorry?
Laziness. A large part of it is laziness.
Yeah. And that's where FM has a part to play in design, because you know as well as I do, in the GCC, if it looks good, then that's what they want. But then I talk about, well, how often are you going to have to clean the glass on that building? What happens when it does rain? Where's your storage cupboards for your cleaning equipment? Because you want the building to look nice, but where's all the power toilet rolls servicing. And all the cleaning kit going to go?
You look at power for servicing and cleaning, etc., or marble buffers, hoovering, etc. Just service sockets. There's a lot of flaws in the architectural externally with regards to the design. You know, balconies off of bedrooms, etc., rather than off of the lounges, residential. But I think there's a lot of issues. Burj Doha, you know, for want of a tower that is stunning to look at, designed by Jean Nouvel. Beautiful tower. You walk in, and on the face value, it looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. Can you remember something significant about the gypsum ceiling in Burj Doha?
Wasn't that like synthetic horsehair?
Correct.
And plaster? So, like a bit like wattle and daub as it used to be, instead of drywall. Mm-hmm. Screw fit and tape them.
An aluminium extrusion frame, and then you had the boards in essence, which were about 18 millimeters to 20 millimeters thick, and then it was set in situ, hung over that substrate with horsehair putted into position, set in situ, and then it was spray painted. So no matter what you did to that ceiling, and it took me about three projects to kind of get it absolutely perfect, was that you had to use a 15 mil board, because 18 mil is like hen's teeth out in Qatar. 15 mil board, and then you had to measure about 4 or 5 millimeters, skim it back, and then of course you had to completely respray the entire ceiling because of that sort of mushrabiya snowflake facade, and of course the way that the sun came from east to west, from left to right, where you looked out onto the corniche, or looked onto the corniche, the shadow changed literally minute by minute. So of course, no matter which time of day, there was bound to be a blemish that you would see. It was a pain in the arse. It still is a pain in the arse.
Well, can I say, from as your client representative, I didn't feel any pain in the arse, and I was satisfied with the job at the end of it. I didn't laugh, Simon. I was just gobsmacked is the only thing I can say, because when you showed it me, I thought, oh, that's just somebody's just patched something in. But then it was all over the ceilings and on all floors, wasn't it?
Whole building. Yeah, it was built by a Chinese contractor, and that was the old school method that they chose. And what makes it even more funny is that the fact that it's probably one of the most modern buildings in the Middle East, award-winning, you know, beautiful. It's got, obviously, it's illuminated at night. It's got the relevant
It's a sexy building.
Great building.
Sexy building, and its nickname was Condom Tower around town, wasn't it, as well? Yes. You'll probably edit that out.
No.
Lovely building.
Yeah, but just it had the raised floor.
And one of the great things,
the raised floor was
where you mentioned before.
Sorry, Darren, after you.
No, sorry. When you mentioned before about us going to open plan office spaces, one thing that we did do was get together a team of ladies, mostly Qatari nationals, but a few other ladies, and we took them on a visit to the site.
Yeah.
And we'd, I think you did some desk mock-ups for us, and we said, look, this is how the desks are going to be. Most of them had modesty boards, and John, my maintenance guy, he'd already had, we had a lot of modesty boards just ready to screw onto the, which was an easy fix. But that building helped us sell open plan to the Qatari ladies who weren't used to that, which you alluded to before, because it was a lovely, gorgeous, sexy building. They wanted to tell everybody they were working in Burj Dawa Tower. They were all taking photographs, and I just thought, right, this is going to be an easy sell now. So we had no problem moving them in there once we just got the modesty board sorted. And the building helped sell that because it looked great. But to me, that problem that you've just mentioned there, Simon, is it sums up GCC countries, because I'd worked in Kuwait, Dubai, and then Qatar. And the architects sold everything on how that building looked and the status and the wonderfulness that the owner, because they're all owned individually, aren't they, really? Yeah. You know, or by government organizations or oil companies or Qatar Foundation, etc. But that was one of the main selling points from the architecture point of view. You look behind into the plant rooms and the difficulties that I had, and I dare say most of the FMs in the GCC have still, in keeping it going, keeping it running, especially, you know, keeping it cool with that amount of glass.
That was one of the toughest things. We had the glass boxes, didn't we? We had the meeting rooms, and for the viewers and listeners, we did six floors, about 100 persons per floor, in a majority open plan. We did two meeting rooms per floor, all in glass. We then utilized roller blinds on the inside for the privacy, but the floor itself ran off of two air handling units and had zero VAVs. And we didn't have the time to put anything in there. So it was literally adding additional ducting and diffusers. But when you had, we won't go into too much of the details, but getting to that perimeter, you had to go through a basically a beam. And there was only so many ducts that you could feed into that perimeter area. So while you look at the skeleton on the outside, and you look at the superstructure, I arrived when it was only a superstructure. Then the glass paneling facade goes on. Then you realize there's a snowflake facade going on. You think, good Lord, this is not just a typical building. It looks amazing from the outside. You understand who the designer is. You get inside and you've got a Lindner Diepa German, you know, $500 to $700 square meter raised floor that wasn't worth a dollar with the way it stood up to roller to operator chair casters, as we know. And then you've got a Hunter Douglas glazed linear grid ceiling that doesn't allow you to have any flexibility in your wall dimensions. And then, of course, you weren't allowed to penetrate any of the base build product, including the floor and the ceiling.
No.
So the we had to future-proof the handback, and we did that with other clients as well by removing the raised floor and putting in MDF and screwing into the MDF. It was just barbaric.
Because those floor tiles look great because they look like brushed steel, didn't they? Mm-hmm. And the suspended flooring. But that cost us quite a lot of money in a defect handing it back. Yeah. And I do remember, and you know my brother-in-law Sean, who's still there, who works for New Image.
I'll get him on next.
Yeah.
Get him on next.
He's a lovely man, and tell him I said that. He came along and quoted for the window cleaning for, I think it was Transfield Man Eye.
It was.
At the time.
Yes.
Yeah. And just cleaning the facade and cleaning the windows was a Herculean task. It would have taken hours and hours. So the costs were huge.
But you know, there's a self-cleaning tower, but it doesn't work.
No. And in the end, you ended up with a yellow desert sand coloured tower in, you know, on that front line off the Corniche, which is probably, you know, one of the most photographed areas of Qatar, really, on that Corniche. How they cleaned it, you know, and most of those buildings need cleaning. The standard contract was four times a year, but I know the Intercon City, they just have a team there all the time and they just clean.
I think it's the same as the Tornado Tower. As soon as they finished one, I think 2 weeks later, they start it again. It takes it like 2 weeks to do it, I believe, all in all. Let's move on to civil defense, because this is something that I'm quite passionate about for the right reasons. And I know you've gone through a lot of the assets that you had within Sidra, from accommodation, as you mentioned before. The hospital, obviously, was
a
huge project for civil defense in itself. But, you know, Burj Doha was fairly simple. You know, we worked around the existing fire systems and we updated the fire safety plans, etc., and got the permits. But one story that really sort of comes to mind about why I'm frustrated about it is that you have a piece of paper, in essence, a civil defense certificate that leads to a trade license or something similar that allows companies to operate. One is not valid without the other. And I recall losing a project way back in 2011 in a tower that turned residential to commercial, which made it complex in the first place. And this company engaged a Dubai contractor to do their fit out. It was a media company. The fit out looked okay, wasn't that bad. But then they couldn't get their civil defense certificate because they failed. They didn't actually do the civil defense process, DC1 and DC2. Now, this is way back in 2011, and obviously NFPA regs, et cetera, everything's evolving, and void depths and upright sprinklers and void detection is becoming more and more frequent.
Now, it was so quick.
Absolutely. And at this time, the gentleman in question approached me, said, "We need our civil defense. Can you come?" I was in the same building. "Give us a quotation." And it turned out about 150,000 reals, right? So about 30,000 pounds. About 2 to 3 weeks later, I bumped into him in the foyer and I said, you didn't come back to me about these upgrades." Now, these upgrades were necessary because the sprinklers were higher than the diffusers. So the water would disperse and clash against the diffuser. There was no exit lights. There was no exit signs. It was just flawed beyond belief. You know, the sprinkler caps were still on. The smoke detectors weren't in every room, and the basics weren't there. So it wasn't done properly at all. He said, no, I didn't need to. I paid 5,000 reals and I got my certificate. And I just said, and I won't repeat exactly what I said, but I said, it's people like you that cause fatalities and not looking after their staff. Have a rant if you want. Give me your thoughts on what your experience was in the Middle East about people avoiding civil defense and the process of going through civil defense and why it's important for companies to ensure that they are compliant for their staff, because that's the number one priority, is safety.
Well, it's important because 17 people died in the Villaggio fire because certain procedures weren't followed when the sprinkler system was drained,
isolated
for maintenance and then never reinstated, or an alternative method of extinguishing fire wasn't brought in and a fire door was chained shut. Now, that's all we kind of learned about, really. And, you know, somebody was, you know, promises were made to the families of the bereaved families, and nothing happened. So then massive changes, and things were literally happening overnight, really, in Doha then. Yes, there are those, and it used to happen a lot back then, in 2010, 11, 12, where if somebody knew somebody, allegedly somebody knew somebody in civil defense and a brigadier would turn up, they'd have a karak or a coffee and the stamp would be done on the certificate. Then things started getting better. And I thought that it all moved on. And I'll go back to my little 3-month stint in 2019. Excuse me, when I went to mobilize the FM contract in an ExxonMobil tower building. ExxonMobil, fantastic, probably the highest health and safety standards I've ever had to work with in my 37-year career. Amazing, because they treat everything like an oil rig. So great benchmark to try and get to. Yet, they had the landlord, he's responsible for the civil defense fire occupation certificate, DC1, DC2. The civil defense had picked up on certain things like smoke vents not working, the shut off on the AC, wasn't linked to the fire, to the fire alarm panel and all this lot. And the problem that we found then was that there was, I'm probably wrong here, but there was probably only one company who was licensed by the civil defense, or one company that we could use or the landlord used. And they were just slow, had no sense of urgency. The building was already occupied and we were fighting tooth and nail. And in the end, ExxonMobil, and they did the right thing for their staff and their occupants, but they got the contractor in. We sat down with them and they paid them direct and paid them a premium to get them to do what they were engaged with the landlord to do, directed by civil defense to do, but ExxonMobil flashed money. So in my eyes, whereas civil defense had probably improved greatly. I know they recruited a lot of NFPA fire professionals from all over the world, Philippines. I think they brought in 30 fire professionals from the Philippines at one point to act as inspectors, didn't they, in the early days. But they'd not got far enough on to ensure that the licensed fitters and maintenance companies were competent enough. So to me, that's an attitude like, well, they're the ones who do the job, so it's not my problem.
Deflection.
But actually, the civil defense, under international health and safety law, the ILO and ISO or 18,000, what, they have a duty of care. And that duty of care just doesn't seem to be, or didn't seem to me in 2019 to be understood. Because we spoke to the civil defence officer and he just went, oh, well, you've got XYZ company and they will do it. But they're not pulling a finger out. They're not doing this. They're not doing that. So I think a better understanding of that law of duty of care, that you still do have a duty as civil defence. You write your report, you put in your recommendations, you put in your must-haves until you sign the DC1 and DC2. But give us more competent contractors to work with and not just a guy who just happens to know somebody. One guy's got the qualification in the company, and then he's all of his underlings just come out, take photos, go back, get his opinion, write the report, and tell you what you need. And it's like having a blank check. So
the biggest frustrations, Darren, is that also that there's lack of understanding. It's not the same process for every single application because it's not the same inspector. It's like a referee's interpretation of VAR by looking at a monitor. It might be a penalty to one person and not a penalty to the other. Or from a rugby perspective, someone upstairs looking at a monitor. The TMO might think it's a decision and might not think it's a decision. So when you've got a different inspector, the interpretation changes, or the pride changes. And we've got an incident where a multinational corporation doing the right thing by their staff want all the paperwork to be in place. They have a civil defense certificate that's valid, but it's prior to when the refurbishment, and it was a refurbishment, it was a 3-month project, took place. It was in the oldest tower in the country. The landlord has done everything that has been asked of them, and civil defense have come back several times and said, no, we now need this piece of paper, and now we need this format, and we need this to change.
Yeah.
And the problem I have as a DMB contractor is that it affects my contracts because I am not fully complete on the project until the civil defense is achieved. We have a more compliant office now than they had before we started the work. But because that single sheet of paper is not in place, this multinational wants to err on the side of caution. Insurances obviously are in place for employee liabilities and workman compensation and things like this, and they won't put their staff back in the office until they've got that piece of paper. And we're all kind of, all of us, the client, myself, the landlord, the maintenance contractor, all having done what was asked of us, we're just not sure which way to turn now. And commercially, it's having impact on a few of us. So that's my biggest frustration on that side. Yeah. Also, the lack of information. If you can understand this more than anyone. If you have a building like you had at Al Nasser, or even Sidra, but that's just ridiculous amount of paperwork there. But Al Nasser had, what did you have, about 15 floors? Because you shared it, didn't you?
Well, we took all 24 floors and then sublet it out to other organizations of
you manage all of it.
Qatar Foundation. Yeah. So we were responsible for over it. It was our name on the lease with the landlord. Okay.
So each floor has got its own set of drawings, it's got its own systems. Yes, they're repetitive, but as you're changing the floor for different layouts, floor plate I think was pretty similar at Al Nasser Tower, but you've got different companies maybe coming in to do the relevant work to modify sprinklers, to modify fire alarms, to modify the partitions, and you have as-builts, and you have O&M manuals. But base build information, I have found, apart from the majority of the towers in West Bay, I found it virtually nil. I mean, imagine going down to industrial area, which I did in 2008, to build a Vodafone retail store and ask industrial landlord for base build drawings and information.
Yeah, nada. There was very little in Al Nasser, to be honest. Just one point, going back to what you said, that you know you get a different fire officer who wants different. That's how it used to be in the UK. I remember working at the BBC in 2005, and the previous fire officer had a thing about signage, fire exit signage. the new fire officer wasn't interested in the sandwich. His bag was the intermittent strips around the fire doors. Right. She was a fire door specialist. So every time the fire officer changed, and I think they did a 3-year tour of duty as the fire officer, when the fire service used to write your fire certificate. You know, that's how it was then. But yeah, I agree. And even in that charity, the old tin mine that I worked for, they wanted to put in a disabled lavatory, so we had to put a massive Sanaflow masticator and pump to pump the sewage. We had no drawings, and that actually was more of an archaeological dig than digging a trench for a soil pipe and a water supply. It was amazing. But you know, so it's not just Qatar, but I think it's more of a problem in Qatar, because I don't get involved now with the fire service until something really bad happens, or like we've got the G7 summit coming to Cornwall, and Cornwall Airport is the hub for it. So every man and his dog and his cat and his kids' rabbits are involved in it. So
can Air Force One land at Cornwall, can it?
Yeah. And it's I can't say too much. But there's a lot going on at Cornwall Airport in Newquay. They're shutting down roads, they've got road checkpoints, big armoured anti-vehicle barriers set up on the roads already. And there's lots of blacked out black Mercedes vans being driven around by people with very short back and sides and flat top haircuts. So it's quite an exciting time, actually, to be honest.
Good stuff.
So, but yeah, interesting, different. Another one for the CV, you know, a little bit of a tick box. Not like a royal visit from Sheikh Moza to come to your building, and that you hope that the lift actually does go to the floor that she's meant to be going to, and all the bodyguards shove everybody out of the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and all the road traffic stops. I do miss that, you know, that extra 15 minutes sat in your car waiting for the to go to the palace.
Sat in a red light because there's an entourage of BMW 7 Series, you know, scooting by.
And then being waved on by the the Royal Protection Police through the red light, and you're going, what about my ticket? You know, that was squeaky bum time, wasn't it? Because you didn't know whether you were going to get your
It was like fine. £1,000, 6,000 reals at the time. I'm like, no, are you sure? And I'm just making sure that he's standing in view of the camera that's flashing you, and they go, ISF, okay. We'll bin all 500 of those. That's okay. Or you'll probably send the bill to the Emir who's coming through the lights.
He can afford it.
Let's just jump on a second before we finish off, because I've really enjoyed this, and I hope that the listeners and viewers have found it informative. We've spoken about the differences between maintenance and defects, and about education to end users and civil defence. Do you think it's important, and do you think it's worthwhile continuing that education to end users? I mean, it's not a sexy subject, let's be honest, but trying to educate people on safety and protocols and the differences when it comes to processes, and of course, you know, economising on things like air conditioning and various things like this. At the end of the day, Darren, there's a big difference between having a 3-year warranty on a brand new car and servicing it every 10,000 miles. It still needs to have both. And that's a simple analogy that you have to use with things like firefighting, fire alarm, and air conditioning systems. So, but it's amazing how many people are uneducated on this.
It's amazing how many building owners were quite naive and got a big loan from their bank and, you know, and built a few towers, and then were like, why am I paying for all of this? You know, Mr. Al Nasser, a wonderful man. I got to know him quite well in the 7 years that we were occupying Al Nasser Tower. And we know, John and I know, and Sidra knows, that we left his building in a better, safer condition than when we took it over. And that includes the great earthquake of 2013 as well. So 2013, 2014?
No idea what
the you're earthquake? About. You don't remember the earthquake of
no,
Doha?
I do not, no.
Oh, man. 4.6 on the Richter scale. We had tremors through business district and panic set in. Oh, very, yeah. Yeah, Google it. Okay. Google it. You'll find out. Yeah. So yes, and spending time with him and talking to him about regulations, electrical certification, sprinkler systems, you know, backup pump, generator backup, switch over systems, keeping the battery for the generator charged on a trickle charger, trying to get him to pay for that. In the end, John and I went down to Industrial City and bought it ourselves for like 200 reals because it just saved us so much time. Sorry?
40 quid.
Yeah. 40 quid for a trickle charger because they never did a generator test. So every month, we'd start the generator up because that only looked after the life safe systems in the building. Mm. That had never been done before. But then his team of guys, every month, they got used to it. Then we got IT involved. Right, what we're going to do is we're going to simulate a power failure. And IT were, oh, my God, no power. No, let's have somebody, you know, in the off-site, backup ready, in here. You know, we'll do it at night. It'll be okay. No, look, we've got to simulate this because we wouldn't have business continuity plans. Mm-hmm. I could talk to you for hours about the lack of business continuity in the Middle East when I was there. It was just panic stations and, you know, go and find an empty building of which there were quite a few back then, really.
At that time, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And how does technology play a part in all of this facilities management nowadays? I mean, obviously BIM, to utilize BIM, I was speaking to, I've mentioned him a few times on the show and I do want to speak to him again on the show. There's a lovely chap called Ryan Theodore that is with Hamad Medical and looking after their assets as, I believe, director. Yeah. And he's all for BIM, as is another very good friend of mine who's in construction at the airport. And they are BIM through and through. That's what they want to try and educate. But BIM is only very well utilized if it's used from the offset. Now, Richard on the show last week was talking about how they are readdressing existing assets and creating scans and obviously details using BIM. Mm-hmm. Now, that's one aspect. But what about the data management itself? What about the information about, let's say, augmented reality or having that asset registered of what and where is above the ceiling that you cannot see? What's behind the wall so that we're not drilling through pipes or drilling through containment, or we don't know where the access hatches. Yeah, the maintenance hatches that just don't exist and you've got the patch in the ceiling for the umpteenth time. You can't access the filter to clean the air conditioning. The technology has to play an important part on that. Now, please take this the right way, which I know you will. With the years that you've been in the industry, how are you finding that transition from old school documentation, hard copy documentation, which will eventually go to online, cloud, and of course, into technology and software?
It's interesting. I prefer the online stuff to reams and reams of paper and flicking through books and books because you can word search. Mm-hmm. Again, if you get a good MEP design and an accurate set of as-built drawings, and then you link the as-builts with your asset management system and your computer-aided facilities management system, all those things, and normally you get them on one system now. So when somebody says, Darren, floor 13, office 1301, there's a rattling noise coming from above the ceiling. As soon as that's entered into the reactive maintenance log, the CAFM system, it gives you a link to the drawing for that floor, for the as-built drawing for that floor. And on that as-built drawing, if there's been any amendments or changes, then it'll either be superseded by another drawing, mm-hmm. or there'll be red lines and then there'll be a description of work. But then you can look back in the history of what's been done in that room, hopefully from day one. So that's without BIM. BIM would normally take you there. I'm currently working for an organization that is just about to introduce CAFM, which is amazing to me that they've been running a business without a maintenance recording and reporting system. Everything is kind of on spreadsheets. It's all done quite smartly, but you're relying on the spreadsheet being updated and the knowledge of the technician who's worked on that building for so many years, or the member of the organization that occupies the building. So, oh yeah, that broke 2 years ago. So technology is the way forward. From what I feel in the part of the country that I'm in, a new build, BIM, is on the shopping list, but it's right down the bottom because it has a cost to it. And I've got some new buildings now, and none of it is BIM. And it's all as-built drawings on a CAD viewing free app on your laptop. So you have to go looking for it. So whilst, yeah, I love it, but in reality, when it comes down to cost, they'll say, oh, we've done it with as-built drawings and the OM manuals for years and years. But it makes our lives a lot easier. But what people forget is this knowledge, this information, if it was readily available, and we can repair things faster. So it doesn't make my life easier, but it makes the occupants of the building's life easier.
Yeah.
Because they've got to sit beneath, you know, a rattling fan coil unit, or, you know, a diffuser that's not right, or something that's been fitted in the building that you can't get spare parts for anymore. How often does that happen? You know?
All the time. All the time.
All the products over there and over here, mate.
The same.
And over here.
Wow.
Yeah. So technology has its part to play. My philosophy has always been KISS, keep it simple, stupid, so that even John, my ex-maintenance guy, even he can understand it. I really hope he watches this.
He is. Oh, absolutely. He's getting linked. He probably has. He's getting linked big time.
But then John is the old school type of electrician, HVAC engineer, will just get up in there and have a look and figure it out and blah, blah, blah. And then, oh, that's how it works.
Yeah.
And that's what he did in Al Nasser Tower most of the time, mate. You know, spent his life in the risers.
Yeah, verification. We're doing the projects that we're doing now is we're trying to help the landlord, obviously. I mean, as-built, certainly out here is all I can really reflect upon is, the as-builts that we get from base build, we have to verify them. Of course we do it, and because we are accountable for them, and they're never accurate. The as-builts even for fit-outs, sometimes, you know, these are the important drawings. But when we are closing ceilings and when we're closing walls, taking that recorded imagery of where the containment is, where the FCU is located, anything that's not able to be seen through a wall or through a ceiling, with the four-dimensional scanning partner that we use at different stages of the fit out itself, from week 2 to week 4 right way through to maybe week 16, you can see that progression for remote clients, which again I've mentioned on the show previously. But when you get to the end, you can tag, so when you've got the finished article, or if you wanted to submit that to the consultants and they don't need to enter on site, they can review that video, that walkthrough. They can look at the tag, they can see the image, they can see how the containment or the cabling or the FCU has been connected, they can see the fire panel and so on and so forth. And handing that kind of file, which is held in the cloud, over to a landlord, apart from specification sheets and as-builts, it's all the data that they need to then be able to give it to the next tenant that is coming in and saying, right, do you want to keep the layout as it is? How do you want to modify it? By the way, this is how it was built. Here's 10 files over a period of 20 weeks, and anything you need is in those files, and you can find it to your heart's content. So we're finding real positivity and positive feedback coming back from clients and tenants, as well as obviously facilities managers and landlords, because visual is powerful, isn't it? It is a bit sexy. When you can look at something back when it was being built and you can record it, it also holds us to account on quality of work and health and safety.
Yeah.
It holds us to account.
Absolutely. And the amount of times, and the amount of times that it would have been great to have got that information in many of the buildings that I've looked after, over the years. So great to see. I mean, I don't know whether you're setting a standard or just maintaining and promoting that standard, but that's certainly how it should be. And any alterations should be recorded the same to a building. Any changes to the layout and the fit out, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this nice one.
Fun. This has been real fun. It's been great to catch up with you. It's been far too long. Really, I'm glad that you're enjoying life down in Cornwall, and things are going well. And please, obviously, my regards to your, as you called her, good wife, to your lovely wife, Jackie. And let's keep in touch.
Yeah.
And I look forward to catching up with you again soon. We've been on at this for a good hour or so, so I might split this into a couple of episodes. But for the meantime, I hope you've had a good chat about your experiences. And thank you very much for taking part in Space Design and Build.
Absolute delight, Simon. Proud to know you. Look after your family and stay safe over there, mate, okay?
Thanks, buddy. Stay on the line just for a second while we end the show. This has been Space Design and Build. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Take care and bye-bye for now.